Welcome to another episode of Unleash Your Supernova Live. I am your host, Nova Lorraine, and author of the newly released book, Unleash Your Supernova. If you haven't gotten the chance to get it yet, definitely stop, take note, get it today. It's on Amazon and at all your favorite bookstores. It's about how you can tap into your limitless potential and unleash that inner greatness that's already within you. If you want to learn tips on increasing creativity and hacks on how to beat burnout, definitely get Unleash Your Supernova, the book, today. I am also the mother of four, the founder of Rain Magazine, Pink Kangaroo, the Rain School of Fashion, and the soon-to-launch Nova Lorraine Couture Collection. I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime for our live shows, Ryan Anderson. Ryan is the founder of Ryan Esquire, a business and peak performance coaching and consulting company. And if you love what Ryan has to say, definitely check him out at ryanesquire.com. That's ryonesquire.com. Every Friday, we come to you live as we teach you how to increase creativity, beat burnout, and happily survive the roller coaster of creative entrepreneurship. So without further ado, let's just dive into today's show. We will be discussing how to find your niche and why that's important in staying ahead. And again, if you haven't already, definitely go to the Unleash Your Supernova podcast on your favorite player, may it be Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, iRadio, whatever suits your heart, and subscribe and download the Unleash Your Supernova podcast today. And again, if you love what we have to say, don't forget to leave a rating. We love positive reviews. So, okay, let's get started. Hey, Ryan.
How are you doing, Nova?
I am good. It's Friday. Everyone knows who's listening and been listening to us. It's my favorite day of the week. The sun is trying to peek out. It just went away. But, you know, it doesn't take much to make me happy.
So you're like most women, you like people and sons that flirt, kind of a flirty son. Is that kind of what you're into? Sometimes I'm here, sometimes I'm not.
You said with the sun, when the sun comes out, I get flirty. Is that what you're asking?
No. The sun's being flirty with you, so apparently you enjoy that. You know, sometimes it's out, sometimes it's not.
I've never heard that before.
Sometimes it's making me feel good, making. Flirting with you. It's kind of flirty.
Yeah, it's absolutely being flirty. As you were talking, it was still coming in and out. So I've never heard that. That is so cute. So how's your week so far? How's it going?
You know, it's good. It's been busy. It's been kind of different, but I've had got a lot of productive stuff done. But the least exciting thing I do is that kind of stuff. So.
Okay. Well, this week has been, for me, it's flown by. I've been in and out of some clubhouse rooms when I get a chance, just seeing, you know, how that vibe is playing out now that things are opening up. Mm-hmm. And I had a room this morning that I hosted called Write Your Book, Launch Your Podcast. So I love meeting new authors, new podcasters, giving them advice along the way. So that was fun. I met some new faces today. I'm going to try to continue to do that on Friday mornings. It's just that I have to make sure that I'm not in bed too late on Thursday night, which is not always a guarantee, because I have to be bright and cheery at 8 a.m. to do the clubhouse room. So. But it's fun. It's always fun. This is the second time I hosted this particular room. And it's, you know, having sort of have to figure my way through writing this book and getting an agent and that whole process on my own. It's fun just helping to guide other writers. And as you know, I love podcasting and it's such a unique space and it could be really intimidating for new podcasters. Mm-hmm. So I equally enjoy sharing that info as well.
Yeah, are you still feel like you're getting a lot of value out of Clubhouse rooms?
You know, Clubhouse has changed over the last few weeks. I've noticed that there's just less people in the rooms. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed recently more networking rooms, which is interesting. And yes. I found some really good speakers for our upcoming event, Burnout to Bliss, the forum that we're having later this month for Mental Health Month. And that's what I got out of the networking rooms. But I was in a room, I believe it was on Sunday. I went in to make some edits to our schedule for the Raid Magazine Club. And I noticed a friend that was in a room in one of the hallways, and I popped in to see what she was listening to. And there were two moderators on stage that had almost 400,000 followers each.
Really?
That blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was like, how do you have 400,000 followers on Clubhouse? There's only like a million people on here. They were on super early. Last summer is when they came on the app, when there was hardly anyone else on the app, and they're both in the music industry. And they were just, you know, having just a casual conversation, and wherever the topic would take them, they would go. And it was interesting. But even with almost 800,000 followers, there was maybe, I think when I jumped in the room, it was around 400 or so people in the room. Almost 500 people. So you could see the percentage of followers aren't, you know, super high anymore.
Not even 1%.
And that's what I've noticed across the board, you know, it's just people are going out more. The weather's getting nice and they could, you know, see people in person, and people are craving that, you know, in-person connection. So that's the biggest thing. But yeah, I've found a lot of value. Like I said, finding great speakers from all over the world. And, you know, for these different events that we are hosting, as well as meeting new authors and podcasters. So I think it's still a very intimate networking tool. I appreciate it for that.
Do you find now that there are less people there, that the ones that are of a higher, you know, I guess, quality, value, whatever word you want to use to describe that?
I don't know if that's changed so much. I just feel that if you are a content creator, you're finding it a little more difficult to have the super packed rooms. I think that if you haven't started creating content in Clubhouse, you're probably, that's not your thing. You're just there to listen and learn. But I think it's the advantage to the individual going in the rooms, because they get more attention. They can get on stage. They can be heard. They can share their business. But for the content creator, I think you definitely have to, you know, assess, you know, why you're, you know, not why you're creating content, obviously to hopefully provide value and share knowledge, but if it's something that's sustainable, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I don't really think, like, during normal times, I don't think Clubhouse, like, per room will ever reach the scale of a lot of the other medium, because you actually have to be there when it's going on, because it's not recorded or anything, and you have to be kind of present and focused because you're listening versus like just skimming material or just looking at a PowerPoint. And because it is so intimate, by definition, intimate isn't scalable when you look at it, right? Because that's what intimate means, right? It is the opposite of large group. So I just don't think that it's ever, during normal times, going to have a lot of groups that have, you know, 50,000 people in a group at one time or a Clubhouse at one time.
I agree. I mean, even around February, March, when word on the street was about Clubhouse and getting an invitation and all of this, and you had Elon Musk popping in and other well-known personalities, you know, I think the rooms were still in the, you know, 8,000 zone, and that was a lot. I mean, I think typically 5,000 is the room, like, limit, you know, and then you have overflow rooms and all that jazz. So, yeah, I do agree. I think that it's definitely harder to get an audience of over 1,000 people in the room, but then when you think about it, it does mimic a live experience, and there are few experiences that have that amount of people anyway, right?
Yep.
So when you think about a networking event, if you have 50 people in the room, 100 people in the room, that's a pretty decent networking event. You know, it's just small enough where you are not intimidated. You can actually have conversations, extended conversations. You don't feel like you're, you know, having your 30-second elevator pitches and you have to move on to the next person and move on to the next person. And then even 100, I think 100 is a nice number. When we do our arena events, we usually our in-person events. We're usually between 100 and 50 to about 200. And that's a nice number. Even when we're just over 100, it's nice from a networking standpoint.
In networking intimacy, it's funny because when you were saying that, what was the thought I had? I can't remember now. I had a thought. You were talking about the rooms and the size, and I was listening to you. And
the
I
intimacy. I think you got tripped up on that word, intimacy.
That's exactly what it was. I didn't think we did the wrong path. No, but you know, that's what.
I'm losing you, Ryan. You're breaking up.
It really goes. Am I still breaking up?
No, you came back. Could you repeat what you just said?
Yeah. I really think it goes to the intent, right? And the intent is, like, do you want quality or do you want quantity? And I've always wanted quality, like customers, quality people in my life. And that is much easier to obtain on Clubhouse than it would be through a lot of the other social media platforms because they're much more about scale and quantity, right? And that comes down to a philosophical question about your business, right? Are you a business that wants a bunch of customers that you don't have quality relationships with, or are you one that just needs 20 customers, 30 customers that are high value that you really are not only providing tremendous value, but that you get to know them on a more personal level, and there so. I think you have to answer that question whether or not Clubhouse is worth it to you, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think it fits nicely into what we're going to be talking about today, which is finding your niche and why that's so important as it relates to unleashing your supernova, improving your business. And, nowadays, having a personal brand is equally as important. You know, with social media, the landscape of even job hunting has changed where employers are looking at your social presence. And if you have a following, athletes, coaches are looking at your social presence. And if you have a fan base. And so I think understanding how you can carve a niche and how that can benefit you is huge. And Clubhouse could be part of that niche. You know, it could be part of your marketing niche. Where if everyone's doing Zoom events, maybe you do a Clubhouse event and that's your thing because Clubhouse events may be a little more challenging to put on. And so I think that it is a unique tool. It's still very new. There's a whole lot of speculation on the direction that it's going to go, especially when it becomes open to all devices because it's still, at this moment in time, still only accessible to iOS, iPhone, iOS devices, iPhones. And so it's going to be very interesting. And what I like about Clubhouse is that if you are a good speaker, if you have knowledge that you can share that people can benefit from and you can communicate that effectively, it's an amazing tool. And then when I was in that room, of the, the two moderators that had over 400,000 followers each. And just to put it in perspective for those that are listening, most people on Clubhouse have maybe under 200 followers, okay? And that's saying a lot. I mean, you're usually in the 100 zone. And so it's not, a mature platform like Instagram where you, it's more common to have 1,000 followers. And, you know, for a non-influencer and even 1,000, you're considered a micro-influencer. So on Clubhouse, having 400K is probably equivalent to having maybe, you know, 10 to 12 million on Instagram. So mm-hmm. I'm in this room and one of the moderators, and she said, I'm giving myself a shameless plug. If I'm adding value, hit that send a tip button, I think it's something like that, on my profile and send me a tip. And she got a whole bunch of tips during that room. Now,
on Clubhouse?
On Clubhouse. Now, was it worth it? I don't know. Maybe she made a few hundred bucks. I don't know. I don't know what she makes, you know, on what's her hourly, but, you know, she was sharing a lot of gems. She was, you know, giving some valuable information, and people who liked what she had to say would tip her. And she would, you know, give the shout outs to those that were tipping her. And I joined that pool. I was like, you know what? I'm going to support you because I appreciate what you're sharing. So I think it's an interesting platform where you can use it very creatively and have it be part of that plan of building your personal brand and or finding a niche for your business.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was just listening to you because, I mean, a lot of what you said is absolutely true, but it's the same for all the platforms. Like, you know, if you're really good at taking pictures, Instagram's a platform for you, right? You know, if you're really good at it, so they're all kind of that way. So it really comes down to knowing what you're good at, acknowledging what you're good at, and then, like I said, strategically using what platform is best for you, best for your business, you know, best for your customers. And doubling down on it is really what it comes down to, which in many ways is what you're talking about with your niche, right? That's part of your niche. It's what you're good at. Clubhouse is just another platform to be good at, essentially. But I'm like you, I like it because it's much more intimate and you can really get granular with the people that you're in the rooms with versus it's so hard to make that connection really. In my opinion, it's much easier to gain trust and respect on Clubhouse than it is on Instagram or Facebook or something like that, because something about the voice, it makes people, I guess, interpret the voice versus, you know, anybody can write something online or have someone else write it for them, and it's so hard to really know if there's any authenticity behind what you're reading online. But it's much easier to interpret authenticity through a conversation, which is why podcasts do so well, as far as, like, you know, when people find podcasts they love, they really follow, they really love those hosts. They're very loyal. And I think that boils down to more of the trust, respect, authenticity factor than it does as much than you know, on when you're reading something. It's so much more intimate. It's so much more relational. It's so much more, you know, back almost when we evolved tribal, that we just make that connection and then therefore follow that person because they become a part of our lives. You know, they're almost like another family member. You can't say that about anybody on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, right? And
yeah,
I think that happens with Clubhouse.
Yeah, I agree. And I would love to chat about what each of our niches are, how we came about them, and, you know, hopefully our listeners can learn something from our personal stories, because it's easier said than done, I believe. You know, I talk about finding your niche within the book, you know, the Unleash a Supernova book, and the benefits around that and how you can do that. So there is a how to do that within the book. But let's talk about you, Ryan, and how you found your niche and or if you found your niche, and has it changed since you started? So, yeah, where do you want to start with that?
It's absolutely changed. I don't think I have found my niche. You know, I don't, because, you know, this is a narrow thing. Gennaro topic, right? Which in the definition of niche, and it's just, it makes it, reason everybody likes it is because there's so much noise out there right now that if you can really make, like, focus your audience, narrow down your audience, become an expert in that topic, you know, really, then it's just that much easier to stand out, and, you know, therefore it should be easier to gain customers, right? I'm not quite that narrowly focused on anything in my life for extended periods of time because it bores the hell out of me. I'm interested in too many topics. I like to learn too many different things. I want to be exposed to too many different types of people that I, just based on my personality, don't niche well. It doesn't mean, I'm not saying this is good for my business necessarily. It's just something I don't do well. So I don't really think I have found my niche. I know you and I have discussed it before, and one of the reasons you went with me is because at the time I was saying vision coach, right? And that really resonated and spoke with you. And it does, like, you know, helping people find or make their vision into reality, right? That's super powerful niche. I'm not even sure that I qualify as a niche. Like, I almost think a niche would be more narrowly defined than that. So, you know, it's a journey that it's been a journey. It's a topic that I visit fairly frequently and I struggle with. So how about you?
Well, I think, okay, well, I'm going to chime in here on that. And, it was a little hard to hear because you're still cutting in and out for some reason, but I did get most of what you said, and I think you do have a niche, and yeah, maybe it has changed. When you were sharing with me what sort of coach you were, because there are a lot of coaches, you know, you have a peak mm-hmm. performance coaching and consulting business, and that could sort of span the gamut. And so one of the things is that you work with entrepreneurs and founders and creators. So that was interesting because I was a creative I am a creative entrepreneur. So that to me was like, oh, he gets me. The other thing that absolutely stood out, as you mentioned, is that you said, I think, what did you say? I work with, I help my clients bring their visions to life. So if you have a vision and or vision board, I can help you bring that to life. And I am a firm believer in vision boards, even though I've only finished my first vision board last year. Mm-hmm. Late last year, I've started many, but the artistic side comes out and I'm cutting out paper. It literally becomes an art project mm-hmm. that just doesn't get mm-hmm. finished, right? Because mm-hmm. it just has to look perfectly. And so anyway, but I absolutely love creating big visions and having someone there that could guide me in bringing this vision to life was super exciting. And that was the first time I've ever heard that said in the realm of coaching. And so mm-hmm. for me, it was a no-brainer because I knew that it would be hard to find someone that articulated that the way you did. Now, most coaches help you achieve your goals. Like, that's the definition of a coach. May it be an athletic goal or an entrepreneurial goal. So really bringing your vision to life is accomplishing a goal. But I think the specificity, did I say that right? The specificness of you describing that goal as a vision really resonated with me. And then the fact that you share that you focus on individuals that are looking like these goals are not just your everyday goals. They're huge, right? What's a vision? What's a visionary? You know, these are things that you're like, you know, if you shared it with most people at the coffee shop, they'd be like, good luck, Sally, you know, good luck with that one. And where you would be like, oh, you want to climb that mountain over there? And then you also want to build a plane that, you know, or a rocket that goes to the moon? Sure, I could help you figure that out. Not everyone is confident enough in helping individuals, you know, really tackle and achieve those super huge goals. So I will say I think you do have a niche. Now, it may not be articulated the same way that you shared it with me a couple years ago, but it definitely worked, and it, in my opinion, it set you apart. Just the fact that you're able to work with creatives, which is a very unique animal in and of itself, and that you are looking for visionaries, because not everyone is trying to accomplish this big thing. You know, some people just may want to just improve their lives just a little bit, and that's good. Or they want to improve the relationships at work, or they want to get the raise, and all of those things are good. But I think that's what sets you apart, in my opinion.
Well, no, I appreciate that. It's funny that you mentioned that. I was just reading something today, this morning, and they were, you know, talking about that kind of curve of adoption. I know, like the early adopters, it was kind of equating it to the curve of mastery, right? Like learning your craft and good what you did, and like the most excitement, the most passion comes when people are kind of that middle of that bell curve when they're not quite masters yet, but they're past novice, and like the stuff new and frequently, and they're getting great at like producing results than they do, and after mastery, and things are coming so much easier that they lose a lot of that excitement, lose a lot of that passion, and this is when people like, you know, quit jobs and try new things because they're looking, because by doing that they're starting that curve over again. And it helps them regain that passion, that excitement. That's what it's funny because you're talking about like not everybody has the confidence to take those clients that are doing high hard goals. That's kind of why I do it, because I think like looking at this now, it's I'm jumping from curve to curve because I'm learning as much about the client's business as I'm teaching them about how to, you know, become great at what they do, right? And so, to me, it helps keep that level of passion, excitement, that love of life and what you're doing, that you know makes you want to jump out of bed every day and go home and conquer the world. Right?
That's right. So, all right. Well, as you're sharing that, I was just reflecting on my niche, and you know, depending on the project, I think could be different. But I'm pretty sure I'm my niche has sort of stayed in that same realm across brands. So initially, when I started designing, I really was vocal about how much I use psychology in how I design. And why I'm even doing designing. I really love the aspect about clothing and fashion that tapped into how we felt about ourselves and how we can communicate with others. And I wanted to use that information to empower women to feel beautiful from the inside out. So that was really my why and purpose in the beginning, launching my company. And then as that time went on and I started consulting entrepreneurs, and over the years leading up to launching Rain, that niche was then not so much the consumer that I was selling my fashion to, but my peer, which is a fellow designer, a fellow creative, a fellow creative entrepreneur. And really, you know, feeling this sense of community with this journey that we're on, this very much roller coaster ride, and wanting to create that support system, you know, for others that I didn't necessarily have. And that niche, I would say, was a risk because at the time, entrepreneur was not cool and trendy and as it is now. And certainly the creative economy, what it was in its beginning stages of exploding, but it was definitely not a conversation piece as it is now. But I felt very strongly about this slice of the pie that, you know, these individuals that I'm interacting with on a daily basis are out there and have those same needs that I do. And I'm going to, you know, create a product for them, which is Rain Magazine. And But it was challenging. You know, when you're also creating a niche, you are taking a risk because you're making mm-hmm. that circle of potential customers much smaller. Yep. And it may be harder to find those individuals, or it may be harder to clearly articulate, you know, what you're offering and who you're offering it to. Yep. And you sort of almost have to wait for all of that to catch up and align with each other for you to, you know, start seeing seeing the mushroom effect of claiming this sort of niche. Because if you're good at it, at whatever you're doing in that really narrow space, and you could do it better than most, then people are going to continue to come to you for that, and they're going to refer a friend and refer a friend, because it's going to be harder for them to find someone else that does what you are doing. And so I think it is important to know that in the beginning, when you are creating that niche, it is a little scary because you feel that you're cutting yourself off from potential business. But you're also, and which is true potentially, but, you know, if you're going vast, you know, can you truly serve everybody in town, or serve everybody
Not well,
of the country or around the globe? No, right? Not well, right? So as you sort of narrow down to what you do best, that sort of shapes your niche. So when you're thinking about, well, okay, I get it. I like this idea of sort of finding and carving out my own little slice of pie. Well, how do I even figure out what that is? Well, think about what are two or three things that you do really, really well? And who is that person that can benefit from that thing that you do very, very well? Like, who is looking for that? Who are you truly helping, right? Because you could offer a service, let's just say pizza, and you're in a community where no one eats pizza, because I'm from Jamaica, as you know. Pizza is not a big thing in Jamaica. I don't even know if it's a thing yet. Okay. So you're not going to see pizza places. You may find them at some, you know, very Americanized restaurants, but you're probably lucky if you find most outside of any hotel. But, you know, that's an example of, here's this product that you think everyone wants, but if you are placing it in an area where they're not looking for it, you're not going to sell it anyway. So it's really important to figure out, who is that person you're serving? What is it that they're looking for? And how does that match up with your 2-3 like superpowers, you know? What are your thoughts, Ryan?
It's funny that you say that, because I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and he said something similar to what you're talking about, but he phrased it a little bit differently. And he was talking about every business, you know, in order to, like, you know, be great, needs to have at least one. And he called it like a hero or a hero service, and it was the one thing that they could absolutely be great at, and, you know, that's what marketing was around. A lot of customers, and they became known for that hero offering. Then you could build ancillary things around it. That were tangentially related to grow your business.
That's interesting.
What you just said, right? And I think it's a great question for people. It was something I was going to talk to you about one of our coaching sessions. I think it's a great question for businesses to ask. What is my hero offering? Whether it's a product or a service, depending on the business, right? Because not only does it give you a lot of clarity, if you can answer that, it gives you a lot of clarity as far as, like, who you are, who your business is, what you do. But that, more importantly, it gives your customers clarity about who you are, what you're offering, and what your business is, right? Because so much clarity comes around, like, it's almost like a product or service is, it's not a brand, but it's an identity in many ways, right? And of all those things. Then they, you know, kind of get a feel, and they really kind of build business for your offering, for your service, whatever it is, right? Through that identity. And so I just thought that was, like I said, this gave me a lot of clarity as far as, like, what a business should start with for their offering. And, you know, us as creatives, we are that because we're so interested in so many different things that we have a really hard time focusing on one, at least I do, because I get bored. And the reality is I kind of don't want to limit myself.
I agree. When I started, that was my train of thought, where I didn't want to limit myself. And same, I get bored easily as well. And it's, yep, it's glad to know I'm not alone.
Yeah, it's a great thing. Both of those respects.
You know,
If you don't have that if you don't have that one thing, and like someone walked up to your customer and said, "What does Nova do?" or "What does Rain do?" If they can't answer that question, they're not going to buy. Confused minds don't buy, right? And So I think that's like once you start looking at it through that prism, that framework, you know, it really changes not only your perspective, but like it gave a lot of clarity as far as like what my messaging needs to be and why, more importantly for me, why my messaging needs to be that way. If that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. It does make sense. And this was something I know in the beginning I struggled with a lot. And even when I found my niche, I questioned it because it was new and it was a small, you know, slice of the pie. And I had to figure out how to express this, you know, to individuals because it was something that they just didn't hear of before. And now time has caught up where it's not a novel concept in terms of being an entrepreneur or a creative entrepreneur. And so it's, you know, proven to be valuable to me now. But in the beginning, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, what am I doing? I'm narrowing my my options. And even recently, you know, launching the Rain School of Fashion Sustainability and Innovation. I mean, talk about niching down to a category within fashion. But then when you niche down and look at, okay, how do I go, you know, first you go deep and then you go wide. And so within this niche, it just creates so much clarity on how you can expand because you truly understand that customer and you understand what their needs are. And then you can create these ancillary services and you can come up with new ideas on reaching this person because you understand them more and more. It's so much harder to understand 10, 12 personas than it is to understand one or two, you know, deeply understand them and find them all in the same place. So when you do go deep, it's much easier to go wide. So that's what I found was, you know, even within Rain, we cover fashion, culture, and tech, but we're known mainly for fashion. And so even though I was shouting on the rooftops, no, we also cover culture and technology, people. But when they would see a fashion model on a magazine, that's what they wanted. They want fashion. And so I had to come to terms with this and say, you know what? They want fashion. We're, you know, a fashion-driven publication. Yes. And then really and truly, when you open the pages, there's more fashion content than any other content. And so, again, that's a niche within that space. And so sometimes you need your customers to tell you what it is you're giving them a value, and that's okay. It's just that it's important for you to listen and pivot when you need to, when you do get that advice.
Yeah.
And that's hard sometimes.
It's very hard because we all have, and we all think we're right. You know, I've heard a lot of VCs say, like, you know, they on in the jockeying that horse, meaning that the person who has the idea versus the idea itself, because when you have the marketplace and the market tells you it sucks, and the question then becomes, can that founder pivot? And if that founder, you know, is humble enough and smart enough, but can't, that those are the founders that he'd like to use. What makes sense? Because, I mean, if you know that's kind of the trajectory of businesses, that, you know, they pivot several times before they really find what they're great at, then you really want a jockey who can do that. I mean, Slack is the perfect example. Slack was never intended to be a business tool in the beginning, right? Like it's being used now. That's not what they, I can't remember what the product was originally, but it's not what you see today, right? But they pivoted into a market that, you know, that really was underserved, created this, I don't use Slack, but I know a lot of people do, you know, amazing product that is now used, you know, worldwide for business. It was not a business tool originally, right? So, that's super important. It's important to realize that that's a journey that you're going to more likely follow anyway. That you know, pivoting is not failure. It's taking feedback from the marketplace, realizing that they're wanting something different, and now either tailoring your offering to what they want or creating a completely new product or service that they're demanding, right? And that's all right. It is. It's just feedback and then pivoting.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Being flexible and, what I say, bend like a bamboo tree. I love that visual. I love that analogy. And that's pivoting. And, you know, I go into more detail, you know, in Unleash Your Supernova, the book. So for those that are thinking about pivoting and having challenges around it, definitely, you know, check out the information in the book around that. But I pivoted early in my career. I pivoted from getting pursuing my PhD to, you know, finishing up early with my master's and deciding to go into fashion and getting a fashion design degree. So here I am, you know, going back to an undergraduate level after being in a PhD program, you know, and that was a huge pivot for me. And so there's going to be times where you have to pivot for your own sense of peace and joy and embrace those opportunities, because some people never figure it out and they're just miserable for most of their lives. So if you are not feeling, you know, good, you know, happy, joyful, and yeah, we're all going through this crazy pandemic period. But think about pre-pandemic, how were you feeling? Were you joyful almost every day? You know, and if not, what in your life can you change? What in your business can you change? Do you need to maybe even change the customers that you're serving? You know, are your current customers still exciting you? If you're a coach or a consultant or a freelancer, are the skills you're offering your clients still exciting you to perform? And maybe you just change roles in your business and have someone else perform those skills. So these are all things to consider as you're trying to reach your greatest potential within business or even personally. So yeah, I think pivot is a really big one, especially if the niche that you thought you were serving is not working for you. Absolutely. Doesn't mean you're going to get it right the first time, you know? And even in podcasting, oh my gosh, when I speak to new podcast hosts and advise them on their shows, I tell them to be forgiving of themselves and be okay with the initial journey. And if you need to change course. Because you know what? At the end of the day, it's your time, your energy. And if you're not having fun anymore, your listener is certainly not going to have fun. And you're not going to want to do it. So if you need to pivot during, you know, podcasting, absolutely. So it's definitely a conversation I have a lot in that space.
You know, you brought up a good point there that I've heard someone else bring up here recently, and be forgiven of yourself, right? And I think that's a super important point that achievers need to know. Often, you know, people who are going out and trying to conquer, you know, big, huge territories, is that, you know, be forgiving of yourself, because especially in America, like we do not accept failure well, even though everybody who's ever been successful has failed at some point in time in their life. And it's all about getting back up, dusting yourself off, and, you know, going on conquering that demon. But, you know, I think that idea of forgiving yourself, that, you know, you will make mistakes, it will be okay, you know, you will sometimes not meet the obligations that you wanted to meet for family, for friends, and you know, forgiving yourself like you would forgive a friend for the same thing, it just removes so much guilt, so much pressure. Unreasonable pressure, by the way. And it just makes it so much easier to then go on and make appropriate decisions, because you're not dealing with emoji baggage that comes with it. And it's a really important point that you made as far as forgiving yourself, because on this journey, you will make mistakes. It will happen. And as long as those mistakes aren't that, even they are, I guess, are the end of your career, realizing that everybody makes mistakes, you know, and forgiving yourself for making that, because most of us make the best decision we possibly can in that present moment with what we have. Most of us do. And you have to forgive yourself for that result, because we can control the processes, we can control our efforts, we can control the inputs, but we can't always control the outputs and the results, because there are sometimes factors that are, you know, beyond our awareness. And so I think that's an important point that you made. I just want to highlight it.
Yeah, thank you. I think that it's something that I probably need to apply more often.
More, yeah, we all do, yeah.
We all do. I mean, we are our biggest critics, and I'm getting better. I'm definitely learning to be more patient. And actually, when I was sending out an email this week, you know, email newsletter, and sharing tips on how to prevent burnout, one of the five tips was be patient. And it's so important, not just with others, it's so important for us to be patient with ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're not perfect. We're not going to get it right the first time. We might not even get it right the third time. But the fact that you're still trying, that's what counts, right? Yeah. And you're doing it because you truly believe you have something that you can provide to benefit someone else. I mean, going back to the pizza example, if you're a pizza maker, you're putting smiles on people's faces every day when they pick up that box of pizza. Mm-hmm. You know, and it seems like something so basic, but everything that we do can impact someone else in such a great way. So we shouldn't undercount that or undervalue that, and we should allow ourselves that patience and that grace. We really should. And if we're more patient with ourselves, we're going to be even more patient with those that we deal with, right?
Yeah, sorry, absolutely. I was getting smiles with pizza. I was like, I can't let pizza come after, but, you know, smiles with every slice or something like that. I can't believe that's a slogan. Because you're right. I mean, like that's if you're your pizza example, if that's what you're doing, if you're doing a great job with that, you are creating smiles, you are creating happiness. Hell, you're bringing people together over food, and they're communing. They're talking about their day, they're talking about their experiences, their hopes, their dreams, their fears, right? And you're helping facilitate that conversation, that experience, right? And so, I mean, you know, we it sounds hokey, but you know, You're not a pizza company. Like you're a company that helps bring people together, right? It has nothing to do with the conversation. This is where my brain went. But, I agree with your point. After my tangent. I got distracted by the smile. I was, you know, my brain went down the whole, like, marketing, branding, storytelling aspect of it.
No, that's completely fine. So I wanted to just jump in before we wrap up today. I did want to get a question in, and, you know, from our listeners, and I think this is appropriate, I think, for what we're talking about, at least where we finished up. It says, what drives you to keep going when it's really tough? How would you answer that, Ryan?
I hate losing. Yeah, I mean, like, it, you know, I have finally figured out what my why is. And then, so, like, my why is my, it's essentially what I record. That's what I think about. When you find your why, when you really, what you're destined to do in life, like, you keep going because that's what you're running toward. You're running toward, like, this big, huge, ultimate goal, because you know it will change, you know, change the world, change yourself, change your family, change your friends, all that kind of stuff, right? And that to me is a huge part of what keeps me going, right? And then the flip side of that is, I don't like losing, right? So like that pushing me, you know, as well, it's pushing me to learn more, to try harder, to be better, to essentially just keep pushing. Like, so for me, it's weird. I guess I found this weird little balance of both, right? I have something I remember thinking, and then I have something else to push me faster. Okay. It's actually expressing that now that I said that. Well, I'm running toward one, and the other one's making me go faster.
Hmm.
Not what I intended to say whenever I started. It isn't quite nice, I thought.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. No, and it makes sense. I mean, I do think having something that's bigger than us, you know, our ego to contend with, is definitely a bigger motivator to get through tough times. You know, just thinking about the workout that I had last night, like that was really tough. And because I was being held accountable by the coach, you know, giving the workout, the fitness coach that was watching us live, I wanted to stop so bad. And, you know, she was saying, and she was seeing all of us like, nope, come on, one more. We got this. One more. And if it was just me doing it for me, then I would have stopped because it hurt. Okay.
Yeah.
It hurt.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Because I didn't want to let her down, and I did want to, you know, show, yeah, I'm here. I'm volunteering to be here, you know, and I'm paying for this service. There's a reason I want this fitness activity in my life for these reasons. So, you know, I'm only going to, by sort of feeling accountable to her, I'm helping myself, right? And so I feel that having that bigger goal to be accountable to is ultimately going to help you, because you're the one that has to complete that task or has to accomplish that vision. And it's that accountability that pulls you through the most difficult times. And yeah, I completely get what you're saying as it relates to that. And just that workout was fresh in my mind, because even now, just to stretch, I'm like, ow, that hurt so bad. But I'm happy I did it. I'm happy I went through it, you know, and I'm happy that I actually pushed through the pain.
You're always happy when
right.
Oh, it's funny that you say that. You bring up accountability. And I, you're right with accountability, but it's bigger than that, in my opinion. So, like, you know, like humans as a species, like, we have two goals, right? It's to make sure the species, you know, perpetuates and goes in the future, which is, you know, children. And then, you know, part of that mission is, like, species continues to grow, expand, you know, your thing. And so, like, you really, it's more like when you have that why, that big, huge why, you're doing something to change society, to help move the human race forward, right? Because that's what that why is. And as a result, like, you're no longer just accountable to yourself, because it's what you're called for. You are now doing something that is for the human race, to push the human race forward. And so, like, you know, it makes it so much easier to keep going when things get rough, because you're doing it for everyone, right? Not just yourself.
So true.
And that I think is what you can pull through.
Yeah. Awesome. And I think that is a perfect place to wrap this up. And I hope our listeners truly received some value from our show today, as we talked about your niche and how that can really push you forward in your business, but then also personally, as we know how our personal brands are becoming more and more important as we pursue our careers, as we pursue our businesses. And so definitely check out the Unleash Your Supernova podcast on all your favorite players. Subscribe for the interview format show, as well as getting recaps of what we've talked about today. I want to thank my co-host, Ryan Esquire, for joining me again. And again, you can check him out, get more information and insight at Ryan, R-Y-O-N, Esquire.com. This is an exclusive production from Pink Kangaroo, and that's Kangaroo with a U, the Pink Kangaroo Podcast Network. Until next time, this is Nova Lorraine, and this is Unleash Your Supernova Live.